Hey friends, this is Gideon Tsang. I am one of the pastors here at Vox Veniae. And before you listen to the homily, we just want to invite you to consider partnering with us. And so we've been using a plant metaphor. So when you grow a plant, you start in a smaller container, and then so it can form and mature slowly. And so we've had this beautiful container, we've called it Space 12, and our roots have gently formed. And in 12 years, lots of exciting things have happened there. We've hosted nonprofits, advocacy groups, school coalitions, neighborhood associations, artists, poets, musicians. And then in July, we actually bought a building. It's just 3 blocks from Space 12, and I think we can form deeper roots. We're super excited. And so in this Advent season, we're just going to ask a couple times, will you partner with us? Will you, or maybe you can ask friends, perhaps family members, to partner with us as we finish up renovations. So what's super cool is that we have some generous donors. They're going to match our gifts at 100%. So if you want to, say, give a gift of $1,000, it'll be matched. Boom, $1,000. If someone else wants to offer $10, boom, $10. And so it's a gentle ask. Will you consider inviting your friends and family to partner with us? If you want to find out more, you can check out roots.voxveniae.com. And we pray that your season of Advent will be rest-filled and deeply meaningful. And I know some of you have journeyed with us from really close by, and some of you are from across the world. And so we're really thankful. Thank you for your partnership. We're grateful for your generosity, and enjoy the homily. Thank you.
Well, this morning is the first Sunday of Advent, and it's the Advent Sunday of Hope. And so this morning, I want to begin a conversation about paying attention. So why don't we do this to begin? Turn to neighbor, and what word would you use to describe your attention span? Okay, I'll give you a couple minutes to discuss. Go. All right. Anyone got a word to describe your attention span?
Deficit.
Bad deficit. What was that? Variable. Okay. Anybody else?
Conditional.
Okay. Good. I like this. Anybody else? How many of us lean on the shorter end of the attention span? Show of hands. Okay. Some of us longer focus pretty well. Some of us is a contextual. Depends on what you're looking at. Okay. I definitely lean, I lean short, but I like to blame the thing. So I'm like, it's not my fault, it's not interesting. So I was thinking about paying attention, and I thought we could start off with this song. One of my favorite Radiohead songs, I think maybe Radiohead's favorite Radiohead song. And I'm going to show you a clip. I edited it down to 2 minutes, but it's a 20-minute clip that you should watch. But check out Tom York talking about videotape.
Temporary loss of information.
Tom York, perhaps one of the most critically acclaimed musicians of his generation, can't seem to play 4 quarter notes.
This tune called Videotape that we got, that was just driving me crazy, absolutely crazy. We kind of had an idea, but we just couldn't see it through.
You see, the reason for all this is that this song draws its power from a musical illusion.
Yeah, Radiohead are purposefully hiding something in plain sight, or what you might say, plain hearing.
If syncopation is so common, then why is it a challenge for him? And if it is syncopated, why does this rhythm sound so monotonous? In Douglas Field's book, Why We Snap, he points out this very conundrum. He says brainwaves become phase shifted so that the peak of the brainwaves always occur at a precise point relative to the next beat of a rhythm. In short, rhythmic sound synchronizes the brainwaves of groups of people.
Temporary loss of information.
Right there, Johnny Greenwood is giving him a hi-hat on beats 2 and 4. And so he'll try to play his piano not on the hi-hat, but just after the hi-hat. You're seeing a picture of a man who is using 100% of his mental energy to try and get something just right. Forgiving like that.
As fans are bobbing their heads and even clapping like this, the band is doing something totally different to actually find the beat.
Especially Colin Greenwood, the bass player. He's playing this really simple thing and he's going like this. He's just doing one of these, you know? And it's just like, where is this? Is he in a club right now? I don't know if this guy knows that he's playing a slow song.
If we simply superimposed a backbeat in the right spot, you'll hear that club song they're dancing to.
Personally speaking, that's my favorite thing we've ever created because it has this inexpressible substance thing going on behind the specifics of the song. So I'm really, really proud of that.
All right, it's pretty cool, right? So you should watch the full thing. He explains it in much more detail. But I like what he said at the end. He was paying attention to the inexpressible substance behind the specifics. So I was going to start with that question. What if we paid attention to the inexpressible substance behind the specifics? And then I realized that I don't think I know what that means. But I like the combination of those words. So maybe a better question is this. In this past week, what garnered your attention? What did we give our attention to? Maybe it's the coming holidays, being with family. Maybe it's thinking through Thanksgiving, you're with family, maybe there's drama, maybe there's work stuff. Maybe it's something you said and you're not sure what they think of what you said. Maybe it's something you did, something you wish you did. You're wondering what people think about what you did. So what is it that garnered our attention? Okay, so just kind of pick the main thing. You got it? So how much of what actually garnered our attention was our life that we were living in the moment? And the question I want to ask then, what if in this Advent season we learn to pay attention to actually our life in front of us? Our text ends this morning and Jesus says this. He says, be alert, or we could say for our purposes, pay attention at all times. David Brenner says this, paying attention is being open and awake, ready to be seized by whatever is present to us in a present moment. This is why it is a foundation of prayer. Attentiveness is prayer, because attention paid to anything is a doorway to the self-transcendent. It moves us beyond our self-preoccupations, like that little hamster wheel in our head, right? It moves us beyond our self-preoccupations and opens us to that which is beyond ourself. Regardless of how insignificant the object may seem, being truly aware of anything has enormous potential to aid our spiritual awakening. And so this morning, we're going to be in the lectionary gospel text in Luke 21. So as is our custom, we'll have it on the screen. Read it aloud to a neighbor, and then we'll walk through. All right? Luke 21, go. I wonder if the beat of the Radiohead song synchronized our brains. That was very synchronistic. All right, sorry. Just an observation. All right, let's pick this up in verse 29. So he told them a parable, and he says, pay attention, look at the fig trees and all of the trees. Pay attention to how the trees live. As soon as they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer is already near. So what is he saying? He's like, pay attention to how trees function and operate. So when a tree, when its branches are barren, the tree doesn't go, oh no, I'm fruitless. What's wrong with me? I'm a terrible tree. The tree knows that when its branches are barren, that the leaves are near. It understands the seasons. So let's talk about seasons for a minute. So let's think through some seasonal memories that you have. Okay. So think of a memory that you have of autumn. Maybe it's the leaves changing. Maybe it's the smell of the cold air. Growing up in Canada, I could smell autumn. And it was kind of a melancholy memory for me because it means that school is coming. Okay. Now think of a winter memory. Maybe it's the smell of a campfire. Maybe it's just the dreariness when you haven't seen the sun in like 3 or 4 weeks. Okay, think of a memory. Let's think of a memory of spring. Maybe it's the first day of sun, the smell of the flowers. Maybe it's everyone being outside, but you have seasonal allergies, and so you're like, all right, let's think of a memory of summer. Maybe it's the sound of a swimming pool with kids playing, someone jumping in the water. Maybe it's the memory of walking into a hot car when it's 100 degrees out. Okay. So let's show of hands. How many of you, your favorite season is the fall? Okay. Winter? Spring? Summer? All of them? None of them. I remember I was in Seattle one time. It was June, and it was their first day of sun that year. I've never seen so many happy people. It was like the whole city was on drugs. No one went to work. They're like, this is wonderful. And this is the thing. When they experience that, no one's like, finally, we will never see the rain ever again. The sun is out. The rest of my life will be summer, right? No, they understand. I should enjoy this. Because the fall will come and then the winter. So we understand intrinsically seasons, but somehow we don't understand that when it comes to faith. And we have this binary vocabulary about faith. So your faith is either doing well or it's not. God is with you or it's not. You feel close to God or you're not. You're disciplined or you're not. But what if we changed our vocabulary and used more seasonal language? Does that make sense? So there's a book that's really helpful. The author's name is Alexander Shaya. And he's a Lebanese author, and he grew up in the Orthodox Church. And he says, actually, the church has always understood our faith and seasons. He says, that's why we have four gospels. So this whole book breaks down why each of the four gospels represents one of the seasons. And he quotes Irenaeus, who's a bishop in 180, so pretty early on. And he says this, the gospels could not possibly be either more or less in number than they are. Since there are four zones in the world in which we live, four principal winds, it is clear that the Word gave us the gospel fourfold in form, but held together by one Spirit. So I'm going to go through each of the gospels briefly, and it's a little technical, so you have to stay with me, but what it represents in the season. And then as I'm going through it, just notice, okay, this is probably the season I'm in right now. Okay, so let's start with Matthew. It says, the principal question of Matthew is, how do we face change? The emotion there is a feeling of betrayal, which is how often our faith starts. I thought that was interesting. The season there is autumn. The gospel metaphor is climbing the great mountain of Matthew. So this is what he says. Whatever it is that we believe would stand forever trembles and falls. So the bottom falls out of our life somehow, or the universe tilts. Dark chasms and precipices appear with the suddenness and drama of a volcanic eruption. It is precisely at this point that we find ourselves standing on the first path, barefoot and covered in ashes. And that's why Lent starts with Ash Wednesday. That's how our journey of faith begins. Then he goes to Mark. The principal question there is, how do we move through suffering? The emotion there is a feeling of isolation and abandonment. The season is winter. The gospel metaphor is crossing Mark's stormy sea. So he says, on the first path, Matthew, we chose to thrust ourselves, or often we're chosen to be thrusted back into our greatest fears and insecurities. Now on the second path, they fight back. And so it's this metaphor of being on the stormy boat, and we need Jesus' help, and he's like fast asleep. We're like, where are you? Help me, right? He's like, that's winter. Then he says, the early church often read it, Matthew, Mark, John, Luke, actually. So he goes to John. The question there is, how do we receive joy? The emotion there is a feeling of ecstasy, joy, union. The season is spring. The gospel metaphor is resting in John's glorious garden. And so growing up fundamentalist, this was sold to me as faith. Spring forever, which is deeply disappointing when you start living your life a little bit. And he says, what now arrives and opens us to feel like an everlasting embrace of an eternal guardian or an intimate lover. It is as though we have walked through a gate into the most beautiful springtime garden imaginable. Immeasurable beauty and bounty surround us. Then he says, Luke then is summer. The question is, how do we mature in service? The emotion is feelings of abounded love. The gospel metaphor is walking in Luke's road of riches. He says, slowly, we learn how to traverse a landscape that is our own singular and original life. And through patient trial and error, we come to know a life of service, service of others and ourselves. One would think that everyone on the planet would be lining up to make this walk. Instead, the fourfold path is largely neglected, often omitted as a formal part of the most spiritual and psychological processes. And so if we don't understand seasons, we hit fall or we hit winter, and a lot of us just walk away from our faith. We're like, oh, I guess it's gone. But little do we know, like the trees, barrenness just means that the leaves are near. Does that make sense? And so one of the helpful things to use this model of seasons, and it's a helpful way to read the Bible. So when you read the women and men and the stories that have been carried forward, just notice them going through the arc of all these different seasons. So I'll give you a quick example. So take Elijah. Okay, so Elijah's a prophet in the Old Testament. And we often have been told that prophets are like genies. They're like genie in a bottle. Just rub it and it'll tell you something about the future. But prophets in the Old Testament, they're less like a genie in the bottle. They're more like Sacha Baron Cohen. They speak truth to power. So he has this arc, and it's the story starts with the summertime experience. So he's speaking truth to power. He has this confrontation. He embarrasses power, and then he wins, right? He probably feels this joyous connection of God's omnipotence, his presence. It probably feels really real. It's probably the it's probably the pinnacle of his career. From that, it goes straight to fall. When you speak truth to power, power has power, and power will try to kill you. So they try to kill Elijah. It's like, wow, are you kidding me? You're like, I just won the battle, but I'm losing the war. So he's on the run. He goes from there, and he finds himself in the winter, which is the wilderness. And in the Bible, the wilderness is always a symbol of isolation, depression, aloneness, but a necessary part of the seasons of faith. So he's there. He's depressed. He wants to kill himself. And then in that desert is often where we meet God. And so an angel comes and attends to him, feeds him. He teaches him to listen to God's presence that's always there. And Elijah thinks, is it the fire? Is it wind? Is it an earthquake? And they're like, no. God's presence always comes like a gentle whisper. Then from there, if you read the story, he now gets sent and he anoints the next king and he prepares his successor, Elisha. So if we read the scriptures, it's just a helpful kind of framework to understand that we all go through these seasons. So maybe a spiritual practice is this. So what season of faith are you in right now? So I'm going to ask for a show of hands. You can opt out. You don't have to. But if you are willing, how many of us feel like we're in the season of autumn in our faith? Like we're kind of on the downward trajectory. Just a show of hands. Okay, some of us. How many of us feel like that we're in the current season of winter? Just feels isolating. Yeah. And look around. You're not alone. It's an important season of faith. How many of us feel like we're kind of in spring? There's some new life happening. Okay, some things popping up. And then how many of us feel like we're in a place to give and to serve summer? Okay. So just notice what season you're in. And maybe the practice can be this. In this Advent season, meditate on the gospel of the season that you're in. Just read that gospel and meditate how it speaks to the season of faith that you're in right now. And all of them are necessary. All of them are beautiful. And then I have an optional one. So in Advent, I know you don't need more things to do. So if this feels like too much, don't do it. But if you have space and this feels life-giving, find some people who share your season, read the gospel together, and just do it like a book club. Talk about it. All right? Okay, let's move on here. Verse 31 says, so also, when you see these things taking place, so when you pay attention to the tree, the barrenness of the tree means that the leaves are near. And he's saying when you don't sense God's presence, when you see these things taking place, when your life is barren, know that the kingdom of God is near. When you don't sense God's nearness, God is near. That's what he's saying. And then he says God's nearness, he says, I tell you the truth, truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. God's nearness is the most timeless thing we can know. So maybe it's like this. Maybe God's nearness doesn't change, but maybe our seasons of attentiveness do, our ability to attend to God's presence and nearness. Does that make sense? So I've had a long-going frustration with the American Christmas. I think some of us share that. And I haven't really known what to do with it. And I've always said, we're so far from the Bethlehem birth narrative. That's what I would always say. It's like commercialism. It's like the American empire. And I'd be frustrated. I recently realized something, that I've actually gotten it flipped. I used to be frustrated thinking we're so far from the Bethlehem birth narrative. You know what I realized recently? I was like, oh, there's a deeper meaning to that. We've always lived the Bethlehem birth narrative. America is still living the Bethlehem birth narrative. This is what I mean. So human beings have always chosen busyness over stillness. We have all these impulses. We need more. We need busier. And the empire fosters that. It adds fuel to that fire. And I was like, oh, the Roman census is no different than American consumerism. And our impulse to be busy, our impulse to do and more and louder, we've always missed the presence of God. And you know what the presence of God feels like? The presence of God always feels like a newborn baby. And so maybe the question for us then is this. We have some parents laughing. Like a crying, still fed baby. Yeah. Not a screaming baby in the middle of the night. So maybe in this Advent season, as the world is getting noisier and louder, what would it look like for us to pay attention to God's gentle nearness that is the most timeless thing we can experience? So a couple weeks ago, we had our retreat, which was wonderful. I needed it. I think a lot of us did. And so the speaker came, a friend of mine. She spoke on mindful silence. She just wrote a book. And so I thought it would be a wonderful surprise, taking the theme of silence. So I surprised everyone with a silent disco. And it was so much fun. So we had about 80 headphones. We had three channels. We had a hip-hop channel, an R&B channel. And then we had an all-women channel, and then we had an 80s, 90s channel. So how it works is there's colors on the headphones, and then you see what everyone's dancing to, and then occasionally, a sweet song will come on, and then everyone tunes to it. And so my favorite moment that weekend was Bohemian Rhapsody came on, and everyone tuned on. So you want to see it? You want to see a video? Okay, so I emailed everyone that I have their email in this video for permission. I missed a few people. If I didn't email you for permission, I apologize. And just know that our collective beautiful ridiculousness gives us such great, great joy. All right, enjoy the video.
Take his life from this monstrosity. Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
We will not let you go.
Let him go.
Let him go.
Let him go.
Let him go.
No.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. So you think you can love me and spin my eye? So you think you can love me and leave me to die? Oh, baby, can't do this to me.
Let's give them a round of applause, because amazing. So I thought it was a genius metaphor for the retreat. That's why I was like, mindful silence, silent disco. It's a metaphor. But I realized, no. It's actually a metaphor for our lives. Because somehow we've got these headphones on, and the world is like, your playlist should be endless. Add more noise, more sound, turn it up. And then at some point, we're like, I haven't heard from God in a while. I think he's gone, right? Sinterborgios says it like this. Somewhere in those depths of silence, I came upon my first experiences of God as a loving presence that was always near, and prayer as a simple trust in that presence. And somehow this is impossibly simple, or simply impossible. That's what it feels like sometimes. So on my sabbatical, the last thing I did a 6-day silent centering prayer retreat. The most grounding thing I've ever done, the hardest thing I've ever done. So on a good week, I'm not that great at saying prayer. On a good week, on a really good week, 20 minutes a day. Good, like the best week I've ever had, okay? We go to this retreat, and you're in silence, and we start with 3 hours a day. It ramps up to 5, tapers back down to 3. The hardest sit was the first sit of the day. So you wake up at 5, you need to discharge some energy, and you sit from 6 to 7. And that first sit, that monster in me is wide awake. I tried it with caffeine, tried it with without caffeine, tried like a little bit of caffeine, tried tea, tried everything. But that first sit at 6 o'clock, I'm sitting there in silence. This is what's happening inside of me. There's this, let's do stuff. Let's think about stuff. Let's plan more. Like this whole thing is going on in me. And somehow I realized that I actually think this is the thing that will save us and heal us, to be with God and ourselves in silence. And it's impossibly simple and also simply impossible simultaneously. So maybe a spiritual practice for Advent can be this. Create an Advent sound journal. I actually tried this for a couple days. Just go around and pay attention to the things you're hearing. I first noticed the birds and then the dogs, like animals. Then you start hearing the wind. Then like helicopters and cars. And then eventually I started hearing the voices, that tape that's playing in my head. And then so just spend a day or two and just write down everything you hear, everything you're noticing that's going on in your head. And just write down. And then ask this, what's the noisiest part of your life? And then what would it look like in this Advent season? Just to like turn it, like find a way to turn it down a couple notches. Or try to hit the pause button somehow. What would that look like? All right, let's finish up in verse 34. So it says, be on guard so that your hearts are not weighed down with the dissipation and drunkenness and worries of life. It's like we're living our life and we're not aware. And so you live life inebriated. You don't even see like what's going on. You just like days pass, hours pass. You don't even notice. And he says, and that day will catch you unexpectedly like a trap, for it will come upon all those who live on the face of the earth. So oftentimes when I'm preparing my homily, I'll go back and look at the original language and the definition of it. So I looked up be on guard. You know what it means? It means literally the definition, attend to oneself. Isn't that beautiful? So Jesus is saying, what would it look like for us to pay attention, to tune in to yourself? So at this point, I'll say this. A lot of times I hear people like, why do you guys talk about self-awareness so much? Like, isn't this a church? And I kind of grew up like that, where there's this binary notion, we'll talk about God or we'll talk about ourselves, but it's both and I think you can't really separate it. There's a really beautiful book that I recommend. It's called The Gift of Being Yourself. And David Brenner says it like this. Christian spirituality often involves a transformation of the self that occurs only when God and the self are both deeply known. Both, therefore, have an important place in Christian spirituality. There is no deep knowing of God without a deep knowing of self. No deep knowing of self without a deep knowing of God. And if we don't believe him, because he's still alive, John Calvin wrote, nearly the whole sacred doctrine, all of the scriptures, consists of these two parts, knowledge of God and ourselves. Or I like how David Brenner says it. Genuine self-knowledge begins by looking at God and noticing how God is looking at us. And so for us in this Advent season, if things get noisier and louder and busier, what would it look like for us to slow down and to tune in to ourselves? So I'll tell you a story. This is my version of it. As I'm telling my version, maybe you can think of your version. So this is a story about my dad. So I'm going to give many disclaimers. One, my father is a loving father. He's loved us well. He grew up without a father. So for him to be able to love me in that way is actually really beautiful. Two, since the Enlightenment, we in the West especially, we've elevated verbal communication as the highest form of communication. But especially folks from the East, there's lots of different ways to communicate. Okay. And then third disclaimer, I probably have a version of what I'm about to tell you with my own boys, but I can't see it. So one day when they're an adult in 30 years, a light bulb might go off and hopefully I'll have the maturity to be in it with them or apologize. Okay. So disclaimer. So I've been trying to notice things in my life where my emotion is disproportionate to the thing. So one thing I've noticed for a while now, and I didn't really have any answers, I have a disproportionate relationship to this thing I'm doing, like giving a homily. And what it looks like is I don't have the constitution to receive a compliment. So people are usually very kind and like, oh, thank you for the homily. And outwardly, I'll go, oh, thank you, right? And then inwardly, I'd be like, but it's not good enough. Could have been better, right? And then my mind will just mull on all the things that weren't perfect. So that's my relationship to this microphone for 20 years. So I've been wondering, huh, seemed a little much. Wonder what that is. So my parents were in town about a year ago. It's the last time they were in town. And we were all having dinner. It was a Sunday night. And we were talking about Vox that morning. They're talking about how lovely it was. Waylon had spoken that morning, and he did a great job. We were talking about how beautiful his homily was. And they were going around the table, and then comes to my dad. My dad goes, oh, Waylon, good job, Waylon. I'm proud of you. And when those words came out of his mouth, I was like, oh, that feels very unfamiliar. I was like, I have never heard the combination of those words coming out of that mouth from that face. And I realized, he's never said that to me. And for 20 years, that's the thing I've been chasing. And when that light bulb went off, I was like, oh, this isn't yours to give, so I apologize, right? It's not even my father's to give anymore. This is my work. And when I paid attention to a part of myself that's probably been there most of my life, I actually thanked it because it kind of carried me far enough. And I don't need that part of me anymore. And it was like this burden lifted, and the change is this. For 20 years, I've mainly crafted art out of fear and anxiety. Ah, it could be better. It's not perfect. And for the first time, I'm learning to create art out of joy. And it's one of the most hopeful things that's ever been brought to my attention. And so David Brenner says it like this. The self that begins the spiritual journey is the self of our own creation. The self we thought ourselves to be. This is the self that dies on the journey. The self that arrives is the self that was loved into existence by divine love. This is the person we were destined from eternity to become. The I that is hidden in the I am. Can I read that one more time? The self that begins the journey is the self of our own creation. The self we thought ourselves to be. This is the self that dies on the journey. The self that arrives is the self that was loved into existence by divine love. This is the person we were destined from eternity to become. The I that is hidden in the I am. And so Vox, may we begin to pay attention. May we live attentive lives that attend to ourselves as God attends to us. May we see God seeing us. May we hear God hearing us. May we love God loving us, not in spite of who we are, but in light of who we are. In a noise-filled, cluttered world, in an Advent season turned into Christmas commercialism, may we find ways to turn our lives down, to slow and quiet, and to hear the nearness of God's Emmanuel. Like a sleeping baby, God always with us, never not near us. And no matter the season of betrayal, or abandonment, or joy, and eventually abounded love, back to betrayal, abandonment, joy, eventually abounded love. May we trust that when the tree falls barren again, that the figs will eventually sprout, that every season, summer will come again. And so may our listening be attuned to the deeper silence where sound is honed to bring distance home. May the fragrance of a breathing meadow refresh our hearts and remind us that we are children of the earth And when we partake of food and drink, may our taste quickened of the gift and sweetness that flows from the earth. May our inner selves see through the surfaces and glean the real presence of everything that meets us. May our souls beautify the desire of our eyes. May we glimpse the infinity that hides in the simple sights that seem worn to our usual eyes. And we pray this in the gentle whisper of God, the nearness of Christ, and the attentiveness of the Holy Spirit. Amen.